It's time for another Og Blog podcast, and I say, welcome from Las Vegas. I'm not actually in Las Vegas when I'm recording this, mind you, but if all goes well, I will be when this becomes available for downloading. And when the biggest bulk of people download, I will be in Las Vegas, and if tradition holds, while there, I will think some about both Star Trek and Peanuts. There are a couple reasons why I would think of each of those. For Star Trek, part of it has to do with this wonderful, beautiful Star Trek The Next Generation experience ride that used to be at one of the casinos, but is no longer. There was a great Star Trek-themed restaurant that went with it, all kinds of cool decor that made it look like someone was about to hand you a tribble on a plate and a tribble in a cup. I wish I could go there again, but as with many things, it is no more. The same is true of the Star Trek slot machine game that was briefly available, probably a decade back. It was your basic video slot machine. And when you got certain combinations of things, it would play some brief clip from the original Star Trek TV series. I spent some money watching Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Uhura, and so forth go through their thing. And when I found that the machine was gobbling my spare cash a bit quicker than I liked, I spent a couple minutes watching another guy play the machine, as he was bringing up scenes I had not. It was some guy in a white bucket hat. Only after a little while, he detected that I was watching, and he turned and glowered at me. And it was instantly obvious why he was glowering at me. He thought I was staring not at the machine, but at him. You see, I recognized him instantly. Anybody who was watching the TV series Lost at the time would have. It was actor Terry O'Quinn, who played the character John Locke on that series. Now, I was quite embarrassed because I had no intention to make anybody uncomfortable. Just because you're famous doesn't mean that you don't deserve to get away for a while. Mr. O'Quinn, if you're out there listening, I apologize for making you uncomfortable. Also, if you're out there listening, oh my god, Terry O'Quinn listens to my podcast! That is so cool! But probably not. And why do I think of Peanuts while I'm in Las Vegas? Well, I'm going to be thinking of it this time for some obvious reasons. I'll be in the city for the Licensing Expo, which is a huge gathering of brands that want to license out things like famous movies and TV shows and characters and designs for toothbrushes and calendars and all kinds of other gewgaws. To meet with the sort of companies that want to get those licenses and make gewgaws. At least, the times that I've been to the Expo in the past, there's a Peanuts booth. Obviously, it's a huge property in the licensing business. They're precisely the sort of thing you'd expect to see represented here. Although I should note that not everyone that displays there is the kind of thing you'd expect. One year, there was a booth that was apparently licensing the Pope. So if I see the booth there, obviously I will be thinking about it. If I don't see the booth, I'll be aware of its absence. But I'll also be thinking of Peanuts' absence somewhere else, and that's on the casino floor. Because one thing that I don't expect that I'll ever see there is a Peanuts slot machine. If you've never been to a casino, you may not realize this, but there are many slot machines based around licensed properties. You can play games built around famous games like Monopoly. In fact, Monopoly may be the biggest player there. There have been many different generations of video slots built around it. Or they're built around movies, like the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, or the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man movie, for that matter. Or TV shows like The Walking Dead or The Big Bang Theory. Or famous musicians. Michael Jackson slots, Elvis slots, things like that. There's even a slot machine built around beloved comedic actress Betty White. And there was a Tabasco sauce one, of all things. They've even been built around books. Now, you even used to be one that was based around the Four Dummies line of how-to books. Really, they had machines that said slot machines for dummies on them. I'm sure there were people saying that that's all slot machines were ever for. But there are no Peanut slot machines, and I kind of hope that there never are. Now, there used to be a guideline that said that they wouldn't have slot machines that would be particularly attractive to people who were too young to gamble. That wouldn't rule out cartoon characters altogether. I believe that there have been Betty Boop slot machines, which is fine, because the bulk of the people for whom Betty Boop is meaningful are older, if not dead. But as time has gone on, it seems to me like that guideline has at least loosened up, if not disappeared altogether. There have been various machines for The Simpsons, for example. Certainly not the most childlike of cartoons, but one that has always had a substantial audience among the young. Or, well, there are recent machines built around Wonder Woman and Batman, although the most recent ones have tied particularly into the old TV versions of it. Yes, watching little bits of Linda Carter did cost me a few dollars, if I had to tell the truth. And you know, with that lasso of hers, she could make me tell the truth. But then I won some money on an all-animated Superman machine, no tie to any specific movie or TV version. So for whatever guidelines they're using, I'm pretty sure that a peanut slot machine would be acceptable these days. But the Peanuts licensing folk have always exercised some control and had some limits, it seems to me. They are certainly willing to license things for adults, but don't license things that are adult in terms of being, well, certainly sexual, but also alcohol, guns, gambling, the sins of the older generation, I suppose. Ownership of Peanuts has changed hands over the years, but the Schultz family has exercised reasonable control and restraint, and if it gets to the point where that particular line is crossed, well, I think that would be a diminishing of the brand. Anyway, that's a long digression. Star Trek and Peanuts. There is some linked history there, if you look carefully. For example, there's former actress Pamela Ferdin, who both appeared on the Star Trek episode And the Children Shall Lead, and was the voice of Lucy in the film A Boy Named Charlie Brown, and a couple of the TV specials. Or artist Dale Hale, who used to draw the Peanuts comic book stories, and then went into animation, where he worked on the Star Trek animated series, among others. Or there were bobbleheads that were made at one point, with Snoopy and Woodstock being Captain Kirk and Wood Spock. And Star Trek did get mentioned several times in the Peanuts strip. The first time is one that came at an interesting time, where Snoopy pretended to fly the Enterprise, which was drawn at a time when the original series was already off the air, but before folks realized just how popular the show had gotten in reruns. So Schultz seemed to be a little ahead of the curve there. But it's the other times I want to address here, as I address a bit of hubris. Hubris not on Schultz's part in any way, but on my own. This goes back to when I was first working with Derek Bang and Tim Chow on trying to figure out what material would go in a book of Lost Peanuts, the things that ultimately became The Complete Peanuts Volume 26. And one of them mentioned the Star Trek strips. And as a Peanuts head, an old Trekkie, I very intelligently responded, "The what?" And he points out that in July of 1978, there were a couple of strips that, when you read them in any collection, they have Spike watching what is very clearly Hogan's Heroes. But if you read the strip when it originally ran in the newspapers, he's watching Star Trek. It's a simple change in the strip. Either the dialogue coming from the TV is, "Ah, Colonel Hogan," or "Ah, Mr. Spock." Now, I feel like I need a brief aside for the younger folks in my audience. Hopefully there's some of you out there. Hogan's Heroes was a 1960 sitcom set in a World War II prisoner of war camp in Nazi Germany. And if you think that sounds like an unlikely base for humor, you aren't the first to think it. But the series was a hit. It was still a staple of rerun television when those strips ran. Now, obviously there was a reason for the change of dialogue, so I started doing some research. I contacted the Schultz Museum to see if they had any of the original art from those strips in the collection. And yes, they had them both. And they could tell me that the Star Trek dialogue, the version that ran in the newspapers, was pasted up over the Hogan's Heroes dialogue, which left me a bit more confused. It means that the version that appeared later in the reprint books was actually the one that was drawn first. Now, why would Schultz change it and then have it changed back for the reprints? Maybe someone asked him to change it, but he demanded it back his own way? But why? But then I thought about some linking of things to things beyond the strip, since obviously we're talking about TV shows, and TV shows are certainly beyond the strip. And I started thinking about the movies, specifically the Peanuts movies. Now, the first two Peanuts movies were released by Cinema Center Films, but the next two, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, and Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown, those were released by Paramount, the same studio that now owns Star Trek and has brought out all the Star Trek movies. Now, Cinema Center Films, I remember, Cinema Center Films was simply the movie arm of CBS Television, and CBS Television co-produced and aired Hogan's Heroes. So the theory began to form in my brain, but I had to check the dates. And the dates proved very supportive of the theory. You see, these strips came out in between the third and fourth Peanuts films, the two released by Paramount. And they were already working on the first Star Trek movie, unsubtly titled Star Trek The Motion Picture. So, as those were the facts I was looking at, those were obviously, to me, the important facts at the time. I began to picture the folks at United Features Syndicate, the people who distributed Peanuts, getting the strips that Schultz had sent in and said, "Hey, why are you giving free promotion to the products of our old friends at CBS by mentioning Hogan's Heroes? Why not give it to our new friends at Paramount and put in a small mention of Star Trek?" It's a small thing, but it would probably make them happy. And in this mind story, Shulks acquiesced, but made sure that there were stats of the Hogan's Heroes version of strips, so you'd have them in the reprints in the exact way that he wanted them. But this was just a theory. A well-formed theory, I thought, but still just a theory. And here's where I had hubris. I thought that the theory was worth being seen. Now, there's this magazine called Hogan's Alley that I've been writing for decades now. It's a magazine of the cartoon arts, comic strips, comic books, animation, and so forth. It's a fairly respectable magazine. In fact, it's nominated for an Eisner Award this year for the very issue that I'm talking about here. I used to have a column in every issue, and they still ask me to write things frequently. And I started to think that this would make a good article for them, not just because of the obvious name link of Hogan's Heroes and Hogan's Alley, by the way, named after a comic strip from the 19th century, important in comics history, but because it was a light-hearted, fun piece, doing a deep dive on what's really two lines of dialogue, four different words between the two strips. It's the joy of paying too much attention to something. I pictured a very clickbait headline. Which Peanuts character is a secret Trekkie, and why has this been covered up for decades? So I wrote the piece. Hogan's Alley was up for running it. It was a short piece, and I was proud of it. I did, of course, include the mention of that the original version of the strips had the cartoonist Sergeant Shulks doing the dialogue for the character Sergeant Shulks. It didn't get a lot of response, but I got permission from the Hogan's Alley people to rerun the article on the Og blog. I actually felt a little guilty not sharing it with the Og blog readers first, but I do want my Peanuts involvement not to end at the blog. But the day that I put it up, I heard from an active Og blog fan, Walter, and Walter pointed out one simple fact. One that didn't correct anything that I'd been working from, all my input was correct, but one that created a much simpler explanation for the change. It showed a situation where they almost had to switch the strip from quoting Hogan's Heroes to quoting something, really anything else. You see, there's an event that I recalled, but I had not particularly recalled the date. Didn't put it in the context of anything else that was there. That date was June 29th, 1978, which is about a month before these strips appeared in the paper. That was the date that Bob Crane, who played the title role of Colonel Hogan in Hogan's Heroes, was brutally murdered. Given the lead time that Shulks worked on, this would have happened after the strips had been drawn, but if people read them, it would have seemed like Shulks was commenting in some way on the murder, or at least brought it to mind, and not perhaps what you want your readers thinking about when you're giving them a humorous strip. With less than a month between the death and the first of the problematic strips, the stats of the strips would have already been made and probably already sent off to the newspapers, leading to the syndicate having to send out corrected strips. In fact, Walter reported having seen both the Star Trek and the Hogan's Heroes versions appear in different papers on the same day, so obviously some newspaper out there didn't get the correction, or just overlooked it. And since the original stats sheet, they sent out a sheet of stats for a whole week at a time, since it had the Hogan's Heroes version on it, that sheet is what they would use when building reprint books in the 1970s and the 1980s. These days, all of the Peanut strips have been digitized and are in a database. And again, it's the Hogan's Heroes version that was digitized and that lives on in the Complete Peanuts and other modern projects. Oddly, I'm still proud of having come up with the explanation that I did, finding a way to work the details together. Now, when I write fiction, that's kind of my job. But with a simpler, more compelling explanation out there, well, there's this guideline in life called Occam's Razor, and what it says is that when you have two explanations for something, the simpler one is likely to be the truth. In this case, it almost certainly is. And so while I'm still proud of my explanation, it was hubris to put it forth. Now, I've done all I could to spread the correction. I made a blog post about it, and in true clickbait fashion, I titled it Spike was a secret Trekkie because of... And I wrote a letter that Hogan's Alley will run in its next issue. The problem at hand may be small, the reason for four words in the five-decade history of the Peanut strip, but I hate for my theory to have misled people. Had I been less bold in presenting my theory, then I would not have been embarrassed, would not have had to retract, apologize, would not be worried about having misled. On the other hand, then I wouldn't have this story. I would never have found out the real reason for the change. Perhaps there is more to life than avoiding regrets. But as I said, as you hear this, I'm probably in Las Vegas. And if you want to spend your time avoiding doing things you'll regret, this is not the place to be. I guess that's it for today's episode. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, whatever, send them to questions@augh.com. That's AAUGH.com. And be sure to check out the blog over there at augh.com. And until next time, if you're going to have tribbles, may they be small ones. And may all your griefs be good ones.